this morning is full of birds and the smell of toast and the faint whiff of promise, and I have left Max behind with the kids on one of his rare weekend mornings off from study, standing in his pyjamas overseeing a messy outbreak of finger painting, his coffee held high out of reach. I've gone to fetch something from the car, and I can still hear them behind me as I head across the street into what is a fine example of a Saturday, and it knows it. I see Gail from up the street, who
used to live in such a lovely street in Brighton,
setting out for the day, enormous sun hat shading a wide circle around her, the radius of which I touch lightly with the toe of one shoe.
I don't envy you,
says Gail.
Finding a park back here later.
Her voice is tinged with warning. The neighbourhood today is positively groaning with what the council calls major events. Parking ticket inspectors stalk the streets like they're on a ninja safari, sunglasses and khaki shorts, staccato bursts of administrative banality exploding from the walkie-talkies at their hips.
Will I see you at the auction?
Gail asks me. And I remember today is the auction of the house up the road. I'm more interested, though, in telling her that I've uncovered the identity of the nocturnal urinator she has always maintained has been peeing on her fence.
Oh,
she says.
Do tell.
So I tell her about the neighbourhood creep, luminous ute guy, whom I caught in the act the other night and who waved at me maliciously like a cartoon bad guy before scuttling off. Gail scrunches up her nose, thinks for a sec.
A little chap?
She asks.
Ratty face?
She asks.
Can't be. His house is just through there. He's got his own toilet. Besides, I've seen those buggers from the pub sprinting away, giggling like schoolgirls. Are you absolutely sure it was him?
And I'm pretty sure. But in the day or so since it happened, I have felt it slip from me, and I am not sure exactly. I am not sure absolutely. As Gail's hatch, with her beneath it, glides down the street to the farmer's market at the primary school, the strength of her certainty comforts me. I look at the sky and I breathe in the morning air and I think not of luminous ute guy but of things I love. I love the piano lessons plinky plonking from the house two streets down and the tiny trees growing sideways from the joins in those ancient brick walls on terrace houses, and how some people use your name in a way that feels like a compliment. And I love a clean sink and hot tea, and how surprisingly good cherries are, and the words porcupine and gobsmacked. And the way a lost hat or a child's sock is always jauntily tilted towards its imagined rediscoverer by the hero who found it, who will never witness the reunion. And the sound of ice in a drink in the dark on a beach, and skinks, and porridge, and Saturdays like this one, yawning before me with a pace of its own. At midday, the baby asleep inside and the other two playing a game that involves cleaning up the laundry, I head across to the pre-auction open for inspection where small huddles of low-talking families are peering down back lanes and testing the structural integrity of downpipes. It's a strange thing, the mixture of intimately personal domestication and public theatricality that presents itself at an auction.
Lovely day for it,
says Bevan in the pointy shoes from the real estate company. In the tension of both the housing bubble and this open for inspection, it feels complicit even to answer him, and people just lower their eyes.
Full house in here,
says Greg, who lives out the back, when I pop my head into the cold, musty, blue 70s bathroom.
Now would be a good time to rob the rest of the street,
he says, and he's right. The tiny bathroom is full of neighbours, grinning and trying not to touch anything. Alan, who is usually in his front yard, shirtless, watering his garden, stands next to Gail, digging little arrows of blue paint off the windowsill under his fingernails.
I still maintain,
Gail says to Greg,
we should have pooled our resources and bought this place, you know? All of us together. Neighbourhood meals, yard for the kids to run around, room for all your creative dabs.
She arcs her hat outwards and her gesture takes in the couple, Dom and Alec, I think their names are, who live opposite Greg, squashed in behind the door, looking faintly amused and trying not to tread on the bath mat. We smile hello.
The thing about creative types,
Greg is saying to Gail,
is that we lack the capital for the utopia we so deserve.
And everybody laughs, but Alan doesn't laugh.
Probably going to lose this bathroom.
Alan takes a step forwards and raises his thumb to gesture at the wall.
Heard the man say, knock out the laundry, put it in a cupboard. When I was a kid here, used to be water pump just here. They'll do the same to my house, I guess, when I'm gone. Open it up to the light and that big windows.
Gail is looking at Alan kindly.
You knew her, didn't you?
Gail asks.
Julietta, who lived here?
Kids together, me and her.
Says Alan to the tiny square tiles on the floor.
Nice lady.
Greg rocks forwards on his feet, arms crossed. Little plan happening behind the eyes.
You know what we should do?
He says, like it's not a question.
We should put a deposit on some cheese and bickies. Bit of a shindig in the street. Bring a plate. Raise a glass to Julietta. Moment of reflection for the water pump.
The couple in the corner, maybe it's Marcus and Alec, exchange a look.
Had a dinner party at ours last night,
says one of them, clearing his throat, suddenly looking a bit rusty.
Way too much food left over. Marcus can't help himself. Over caterers anonymous.
I'm Italian.
Shrugs Marcus with a what are you going to do face.
Anyway, great food. Come over, all of you. How's tomorrow? Casual afternoon thing. Bring a plate and a chair. What do you think? Too last minute?
Then a genuine punter comes in to inspect the bathroom and we head out in an awkward single file. Zara and her sister are out the front when I head out, making daisy chains on the nature strip. Greg has cornered their mother, who has obviously come looking for them and who nods while he invites them to the leftovers party, a huge, rewarding smile on her face.
See you next time,
Zara says to me as I leave. Later, hours later, I'm driving home when I realise Gail was right. Not a car park in sight. The kid and the baby in the back fraying at the edges of their exhausted hysteria, and I'm trying to find a car park when I glimpse one up ahead. It's not where I'd usually go, but I'm thrilled to find anything at all. The Flower and Garden Show is on in the park, a major event which Gail describes as
horrifyingly expensive. But goodness me, it's a whole world these days, isn't it? Gardening has always been women's work, you know? But not at the Flower and Garden Show. No siree. Lots of good-looking young men with beards making themselves rich, winning design prizes at the Chelsea Garden Show. The punters, though, they're all middle-aged women taking their elderly mothers to look at the succulents, trying to make the most of their overpriced tickets so they can get the train home to Emerald before dark.
The streets are full of them tonight, plus leather-jacketed comedy festival types leaping off trams or tying their bikes to no parking signs, while a bit further up there seems to be a festival of good living, whatever that might be, and apparently it involves fire twirling. For these reasons, I am pulling into the only car park in the street when a few things happen very quickly. First, I notice someone's rubbish bin has been placed in one end of the car park. I figure I'll edge most of the way in and get out and move it, but then I see him. Luminous ute guy. In my peripheral vision at first, from the side, from his house, walking, running towards me. He's shouting too, his face twisted in anger, shouting about it being his car park, his rubbish bin. Swearing about respect, his voice harsh and piercing, and when he screams the words,
stupid bitch,
he sends a fleck of spit in a majestic arc across the late afternoon sunbeam.
Hey, fuck off! Motherfucker!
He is carrying, I realise with a shot of adrenaline flooding through me, a cricket bat, like a weapon, over his angry head as he comes at me. He's shouting the terrifying raw bellow of a grown man. Harsh, hateful profanity about me, about my gender, about my car, my face, about who I think I am. It's all so fast and I'm scrambling now to inch the car back out of the car park. In a rush to turn the steering wheel, I knock the kid's music up loud and see him, ludicrous now, scream beneath a Sesame Street soundtrack. Me lost me cookie at the disco, sings the Cookie Monster. An luminous ute guy flies at me. Bang! Down goes the palm of his hand on the roof like a thunderclap. I crunch the gears, veering forwards towards him accidentally, setting off a fresh set of accusations. He takes a step back and I see he's going to smash the passenger side window with his cricket bat, but I am out. I am out of that car park and I am off, speeding down the street, my heart in my mouth. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I turn off the Cookie Monster and drive to the police station, the blood thumping in my ears. The kids are quiet in the back. That wasn't okay, I feel myself saying to them. That was not okay. Later, much later, after the police statements and the waiting and the agonising reconstructions and deconstructions of everything that took place, where was his hand exactly? What did he say exactly? How would you describe how you felt at that point? What colour top was he wearing? After another set of police officers found Luminous Ute Guy at home, unaware I was a neighbour, apparently very apologetic, tail between his legs, didn't mean to scare me, after some coded conversation with the police who know this guy, familiar with his profile, some psychological trouble but not too much to worry about, be surprised if he bothers you again, after the pizza from the place near the police station, the kids, drained of the drama and bored now, we come home and there, slipped through the mail slot, is a piece of paper torn from a notepad. Blue biro scratched across it. You're in charge of salad, it says. Laneway, midday, bring a chair. I hold the paper in my hand and, despite the uneasy, shaken feeling that is still very much with me, I notice that my hands are still and strong and I am at home and the kids are okay and the neighbours, the nice ones, are having a party tomorrow in honour of a departed friend, and Luminous Ute Guy is not invited. As Max bustles the four-year-old to bed, I hear the plinkety-plonkety of the piano up the street and the baby grows heavy in my arms. I look at the dark blue night sky and the cranes over the road, and a siren wails in the distance. And I'm in charge of salad.